Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
This week we're doing a watch-along. Two watch-alongs, in fact. Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike, we're doing watch-alongs this week.
Yeah, you know, and this is the perfect week to do it, Jimmy, because obviously it's the Christmas week going into New Year's, and we can just have a little fun with this here because I know you're excited to talk about your favorite wrestler of all time, and I'm excited to talk about my favorite wrestler of all time. So double duty, double feature.
Exactly. So we're going to start off first with my watch-along because, of course, it is my podcast. My watch-along...
You are such a
jerk.
I hope you got coal in your stocking. I hope you did. You deserve it.
Yep. My watch along will be Mankind winning the WWF Championship in Worcester, Massachusetts against The Rock. So what you want to do right now, go to the WWE Network, go to the Raw replay section. Go to 1999. It's Raw number 293. It's January 4th of 1999. That is the air date of the show. It should be the second to last dot on the video file. That is dot number 16. If you don't have the dots, it's 1 hour, 20 minutes, 21 seconds. That's the timestamp. So, Mike, while people are loading up their WWE Network, did you watch this match on TV? Were you in the building in Worcester? Were you on Nitro? Because Nitro was, of course, airing from the Georgia Dome, and that was the night of the Finger Poke of Doom.
Right. No, I was watching this at home. I was not there at the Worcester Centrum. This would be, let me see here, 99 January. So that was my freshman year of high school. Obviously it was taped on what, December what? What was the date? December?
December 29th.
29th. So yeah, in the snowstorm there in Worcester, Massachusetts. And you know, I remember reading up on it the day after with the spoiler alert, what happened. It was like, wow, that is crazy. But I had to find out immediately because it was awesome. And I was not at that show. I do regret not being able to go to it. The only Raw I was at later in the year, actually, yeah, it was the one in the Fleet Center, June 7th, 99, the Higher Power, Vince McMahon for that one. But This was a great show, and I'm really glad you picked this because Worcester is, you know, I know they get made fun of for the city and so forth, but it's a really great venue to watch wrestling there in the now DCU Center. It's awesome.
So the time between my trips to Worcester, the last time, so I went to this show in Worcester. I didn't go back to Worcester until Pearl Jam did a show at the Centrum or the Dunk or whatever it's called now. DCU Center, something like that. And it took Felger and an act of Congress to get me to go back to Worcester. I've been there a few times since then, but Pearl Jam played there after they had released one of their albums. Felger wanted to go. Felger wanted to take me. I told him, no, I'm not going to Worcester. Worcester's a dump. And he's like, well, what if I get a car service? I'm like, I don't know. I don't think so. He's like, I'll pay for the tickets.
You turn that down?
I'll pay for booze. Okay, I'm in.
Yeah, there you go. Good.
So I got car service, free tickets, and booze.
Yeah, that's a home run.
But I had to go to Worcester, though, Mike.
So what? But it's on Mike Felger's dime, so who
Worcester's
cares?
A dump.
Oh, please. Listen, those people work hard there, and you know what? I respect the city of Worcester.
The best thing to ever happen to Worcester is what we're about to watch.
Well, I'll tell you right now, Jimmy, you want to get a cheap pop for Worcester? You do what I did the night I was with you there for that house show August of 2017, I was wearing a Worcester Fire Department t-shirt. Three Worcester firefighters came up to me and they said, thank you for the support. That is a cheap pop, but I do support the fire, as you know, and that was a great way to get over with them.
I will tell you also that that Worcester house show that we went to is definitely a top 2, 3, 4 house show that awesome I've been show. To as far as like overall experience goes.
Yep. And tell everyone who got backstage.
Oh, I got you backstage. You're welcome.
No, tell us who we got.
So on WWE Network, if you're at the 120:21 timestamp, it should be Mick Foley right now and his Titantron. You should be watching Mr. Socko. And Mike, you're ready to go. You're ready to watch along.
I'm ready. I'm trying not to laugh here. Your humor's killing me tonight. I don't know why, but go ahead.
Yeah, let's because I'm just I've turned the corner. It is a new direction. It is a new direction. This is the new James Stewart. Look out for my vegan recipes, everybody.
All right. Let's go.
All right. Ready. 3, 2. And hit play. And now we're watching the match. It should be Mankind walking into the arena. They actually redid his music for this. This was like the third time that they had done it because, well, you can't have too demonic an entrance theme. But as Mankind walks to the ring here, I was at the show live, and when they announced this match, I was completely despondent. I was angry. I was there with my mom, my dad, and my friend Paul, and we drove from Newton, Massachusetts to Worcester in a snowstorm. And all I'm thinking as Mick is now in the ring, DX is coming down the aisle, is Mick Foley is going to be beaten twice in the same night by Triple H and The Rock. Why did we make this trip? I was so angry because they had treated Mick Foley like a second-rate citizen. Of course, the show was taped in Worcester on Tuesday, December 29th, 1998, and I sat in section 329, row B, seat 15, and the ticket stub sits above my desk, and it's got a photo of Mick winning the championship that night, and he autographed it for me and personalized
it. I was
going
to ask you if you did.
It sits proudly above my desk. Maybe I'll tweet out a photo of it or put it on Instagram or something like that on the anniversary. But as The Rock walks to the ring, the corporate champion, of course, The Rock won the WWF championship at the Deadly Games tournament, which was one of Vince Russo's more brilliant one-night show scriptings. I love championship tournaments, and I thought the Deadly Game tournament was awesome.
It was good. It was good. And I have a fun fact for you on that Survivor Series 98. It took 7 years for the Survivor Series to have a positive buy rate, and that was the first one since 91. So November of 98 for the Survivor Series, the buy rate was down for the pay-per-views there, and it took 7 years for it to kind of get back out of the gray.
So this is interesting. You've got Mankind versus The Rock. This is a rematch from their Rock Bottom match, which Mankind won, but since The Rock didn't get pinned or submitted, he had passed out, there was no title change. Earl Hebner, very important referee here in the history, and they also have the Corporation and DX alongside. Rock gets the jump start on Mankind as he's being taunted by the Big Boss Man and Vince McMahon.
Just look at all that star power there, Jimmy.
Oh,
look at all those
Hall of Famers, people who run creative.
Yeah.
Like just so much talent in and around the ring.
Unfortunately, let's see, Big Boss Man, Test, and China, three of them are now deceased.
And The Rock working on the outside over Mankind.
Okay, now look at that royal blue Patriot jersey, 1990s. That's a Zolak jersey and a Bledsoe one.
Mankind firing back here. If I recall correctly, Mankind essentially tortured Shane McMahon after he had lost to Triple H, and that's how he got this match, and he got the no disqualification stipulation with The Rock that night. That's kind of why The Rock is wearing an Adidas jumpsuit. At least for storyline purpose. I believe the real reason is he had surgery to remove fatty deposits from around his pectoral breast region.
Okay. All right. And this was just a great time. Like, this was more or less the heart of the Attitude Era, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, this was definitely a big point. You had Austin, who had had his big moment, mm-hmm. and now you're trying to build around Austin. And you had The Rock, who was ascending as a top good guy, and then you had The Rock switch to the corporate champion at the Deadly Game Survivor Series tournament in 98.
Shock.
Which was, it was tremendous.
Yeah.
Those steps, by the way, no joke.
Oh, yeah.
Those are like 40-pound steps, and I just, like, I can hear Jim Ross screaming, although Jim Ross wasn't on the call, this just screaming like, oh, he knows how to, you know, there's somebody sitting on their couch saying, oh, well, they know how to take that. Well, they don't.
Right.
They don't.
You can't fake that.
This is, I think Rock is about to drive him into, Rock's going for a suplex here, gets him over. I think Rock's about to grab the headset and do commentary, which was one of my favorite things. Yep, there's that jabroni Michael Cole. No personality. And white, now The Rock's so doing print. Commentary.
Best thing in the commentary booth that night, Jimmy, right there. Look at that.
I actually let's do this illegally. Hang on,
turn
Mike.
Turn him up.
Mankind wants him out of here.
As Mick Foley pops him. I think Mick's going to grab the headset, too. I'm going to mute this I'm going to mute this so I don't get in too much trouble. I was trying to pick up The Rock's commentary. When Mankind takes the microphone, I'll put the mute button back up, or I'll unmute it. I'll put the sound back on.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Here's Mick.
Hey, wait a minute.
Mankind's looking real good.
Yeah.
Kid's showing a lot of testicular.
You're looking great.
I can't hear him. I don't have my volume turned up. What does yours say?
Mick, just like, oh, he's The Rock is looking real great. He's got this testicular fortitude.
Now, what was your, do you remember what you were wearing that night? What shirt you had on?
I was probably wearing the Mankind Have a Nice Day shirt.
Oh, yeah, with the mask on.
With the mask on it. That was probably what I was wearing that night.
That was a cool shirt.
That was supporting my guy. That was my guy. Mick was my guy. Mick has been my guy for a long time. Nice. Ever since I saw, it was a Clash of Champions in WCW. Here comes a Rock Bottom through a table. Oof.
That hurts.
Vince's facial expression made that move.
Yeah.
He's like, Shane. Ugh.
Look at how young Shane is there. Holy cow.
Ugh, we're putting the belt on him tonight? What was I thinking, pal? Well, you're thinking that Mick Foley just sold a ton of books. He's getting a great response from the crowd. He took the mandible claw, put a sock on it, and created a character that helped draw money.
He was number one in the New York Times bestselling list, too.
Twice.
Yep. The second book was actually really good, too.
I think I have all of Mick's books. I even bought Tatum Brown, which was a really dark book. But
oh, is that right?
Some would consider me a really dark person at times. So
I can write a book about that too.
But here's the thing: The Rock is laying in those punches. There he goes for a pinfall. Nice hook of the leg, Earl. Nice steady count by Earl Hebner. Earl Hebner, one of the more underappreciated third men in the ring.
Well, yeah, he's. I mean, look at all the. I mean, Vince essentially could call for the bell anytime, or just communicate with Earl there. And Shane, there's so much communication happening.
So Steve Austin did a watch-along with this back in 1996, and he points out, and the reason why I point out Earl Hebner is because it's a no-disqualification match, but they're still moving and manipulating the referee around so The Rock can cheat or the corporation can cheat. It's like a little detail that you kind of get lost, but like Earl was distracted there, and the big boss man and the corporation were choking Mankind because you're still working, being a villain, and you're still taking the referee. And it's a little detail that Steve Austin pointed out, and it just adds that extra little dimension and emotion into the match. Sure. Power slam by The Rock. Here comes the people's elbow. Rock should be facing the hard camera, but that would later get corrected.
And don't forget here too, Jimmy, I mean, for people to kind of understand the timing.
Oh, the Vince facial expression is so good. Two and a kick out by Mankind.
You know, just so people understand the real timing of this whole Attitude Era, this was 6 months after Hell in a Cell with The Undertaker. This was right before the famous I Quit match at the Royal Rumble.
Nice swinging neck breaker.
This is all the timing there. All those big events in the Attitude Era right here. It was awesome.
Yep. I think, by the way, when we get closer to the Steve Austin pop, I think I'm going to turn the volume back up. Because I want everybody out there who doesn't remember this to hear that. See, Earl Hebner right there, distracted by Shane McMahon.
Ooh, look at that head.
Takes a belt shot, rocks slow to the cover.
How does Earl Hebner not
kick out?
How does he not see the belt getting thrown over there?
So it's no DQ. So this is what it is. It's a no DQ match. So it doesn't matter, but there's still Earl distracted again by somebody.
Ooh.
Nice double arm DDT. Should have been on the championship, but Mick kicked it away.
So
and a cover. Earl a little slow to get down there.
Well, he's an old man. Look at The Rock. Wide open eyes. Holy cow. That championship belt right there that you see in the ring, I have that replica that has WWF on it. Mick Foley signed that for me. Steve Austin has signed it, and The Undertaker just signed it 2 weeks ago, and I'm looking forward to having The Rock sign it at some point, too.
Here's the sock, Mr. Socko. Mandible claw, legitimate finisher. Mr. Socko, nice little character. Look at the crowd. Crowd's into it. I remember I was into it a little bit, and here comes Shamrock with the chair, and I am going to put the volume up on this because here comes Steve Austin.
Oh, yeah. Let's go. Oh, this was awesome.
That pop is the number one pop. That glass breaking. And he's about to wham The Rock with the chair. The sound of the chair. Austin puts him on top. Here comes the count with the crowd.
Look at Vince.
And I get goosebumps because Austin's music hit for me. I jumped up out of my chair from a totally despondent place and screamed in excitement and joy. and part of the reason why is because Austin wasn't on Raw the night before.
Right.
So there was no indication that he was going to be there.
Right.
And so that's why I think in part he got the ovation that he got.
And it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, too.
It is, but it was that much more amped up because nobody saw it coming.
Right.
And that's kind of the cooler things with wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I will put that pop that Steve Austin got up against any other pop there is. The close second is when we were in Dallas and Steve Austin's music hit. And granted, I think Worcester holds 5,000 people, 6,000 people. Maybe it's more than that.
Well, the sound's contained.
Exactly. But you're talking a 6,000 person pop against 100,000 people. I'll put this Mick Foley pop against anything.
Yeah, no, that was huge. And just any time the glass comes out, and like you said, Jimmy, the whole build up to it where 14,000 it holds. I don't know what it is for wrestling. I'm going to find that out, though. But, you know, with Stone Cold not on the event the whole time there and then the night before, that was the whole reaction to it that made it much better. And I love that. It was fantastic. Oh, my God. I love it.
This is the good stuff. And this is my number one moment in pro wrestling.
Wow.
I don't think anything will beat it because I was just so emotionally invested in Mick Foley, the character. And so in subsequent years, I've gotten to spend some time with Mick. I've gotten to do interviews with Mick, time meaning social time with Mick. And he is my number one all-time favorite wrestler. And he has never disappointed me whenever I've been in his company.
Yeah. No, he's a stand-up guy. Good guy all around. And, you know, one of the best. Oh, here he is in the microphone. What did he say on the mic, Jimmy?
I believe he said he dedicated the match to his kids, or he's about to. I think he said, Vince, this feels pretty damn good. But I remember him dedicating the match to his kids, and he went like, yo, Big Daddy-O did it, something along yeah. those lines.
Right, right.
So there's a little detail that Steve Austin, and then we'll wrap up this. When Steve Austin is backing away from Vince McMahon, he throws his hat at him. And it's just to add a little bit more anger and to get under Vince's skin just a little bit more.
Right.
And it's a nice little detail there. Steve Austin points out when he did his Watch Along podcast, he's like, I had a prop. I threw it at him. I used the prop. And then I got out of Dodge because it wasn't about me. It was about Mankind winning the title. It was about Mick Foley finally overcoming the odds to win the championship.
And you know, the majority of 98 was Austin and McMahon. So, you know, again, right there, and even going into 99, it carried on for so many years. But the whole 98, that was pretty much the story of the year there. So that rival went on for a long time, and that was just another piece of the puzzle right there with Austin and Vince. That was awesome. That brought back some good memories, Jimmy. I remember that really well. I really do. That was amazing. 20 years ago, it's going to be. I can't believe that. Wow.
Yep. Like I said, that moment meant so much to me that I still have the ticket stub. I have the photo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mick was nice enough to autograph it for me in later years. And mm-hmm. it sits above my desk. And maybe I'll tweet it out. Maybe I'll take a picture of it and tweet it out.
Do it on the 29th.
On the anniversary. Maybe we'll do that.
Might as well. Or you can do it on January the 4th when it aired, or the 5th, rather, of 99.
I would rather put out the picture of the finger poke of doom on January 4th.
Mike. No, that was just really cool. And, you know, you got me thinking now, like, what would be my top wrestling moment? But I'll have to save that for another time. But I'm really glad to hear that, Jimmy, with so much connection for you right there with Mick Foley and, you know, being able to interact with him and being there, too. That's really cool to hear your take on the whole thing right there.
Coming up next, it's Mike's pick, and it's going to be from 1991. It's The Undertaker challenging Hulk Hogan for the WWF Championship. It's Survivor Series, and it's next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
So for Mike's watch along, he has selected Undertaker versus Hulk Hogan for the WWF Championship in 1991. Go to the WWE Network, Survivor Series, 1991. It's the 6th dot on the video file. 1 hour, 11 minutes, 16 seconds is the timestamp. Mike, why did this match or this moment stand out to you? Why did you pick this?
So I'll tell you, Jimmy, going into the 1991 Survivor Series, I tell people a lot of the time, someone asked me this last year on Twitter, what was like your first wrestling moment that that really stood out for you, really you'll always remember? And the one that I remembered the most, like all the details and so forth, was when the Macho Man got snake bit by Jake the Snake Roberts' snake there. He tied him up in the ropes. And that, of course, was like a week or two before this Survivor Series. I was watching the WWF Superstars at home. My father's now a retired police officer. So he was, at the time he was working at nights, but he was sleeping during the day. But I remember the Superstars came on at like 1 o'clock on Saturday on Fox 25, shameless plug for them in Boston. And he was getting ready to go to work and we're watching it and we're just so invested in that whole angle. Is like, wow, this is crazy. And then just seeing so much other, so many other storylines that develop with the two, Ric Flair in the WWF with the new gold belt, the old NWA belt, the Undertaker at the funeral parlor. And I was really intrigued by the character of the Undertaker. Like, yeah, he scared the living daylight out of me, but still an intriguing figure. And Hulk Hogan, of course, like, who's he not a hero to? So that really, Undertaker, Ric Flair, and Hulk Hogan, all three of those guys right there, why I just, they all surround this match here. And it was my real first memory, more or less, for professional wrestling with the Jake Roberts Macho Man. And, you know, this match here was also on our poll for our Survivor Series watch along that you and I did, but it did not win. It came in second place, I believe. That was behind, of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin and Bret Hart. So it was a match I wanted to talk about if the poll had won. So I'm going to do it tonight. Here we go. 91 Survivor Series from the Joe Louis Arena on Thanksgiving Eve, 1991.
So I'm guessing, because I don't have great recollection of this match, that this will be the first time that I've watched this match since it happened.
Okay. All right.
And I wrote down my opinion of how I remembered the match.
Yep.
And I will, I don't know if I should share that now or whether I should share that after the fact.
Or share it during the match. There's going to be a lot of dead time, no pun intended.
Oh, that's, well, so I recall this match being terrible.
Yeah, so it wasn't that good. It really wasn't. But the storyline is the big factor of it. And there are really some cool facts about the whole thing, which really kind of propelled the career of The Undertaker and the direction of WWF for years to come.
So here's your timestamp, 1 hour, 11 minutes, 16 seconds. Mike, are you ready to hit play?
Let's rock and roll.
All right, 3, 2, hit play.
Okay. So there you have it. Joe Louis Arena, look at those graphics. It's like a public access graphic. We've come a long way. And look at that little kid there. He is so scared of The Undertaker coming down the aisle with Paul Bearer. Wow.
Paul Bearer was so good.
He really was.
I don't know. Did you ever get to see his work in Texas when he was Percy Pringle?
Old videos. Go to the microphone.
His promos were so good. They were better than when he was Paul Bearer. There's mean Mark Callis right there.
And, you know, look at that.
The master of the heart punch.
Yeah. And then, you know, Gorilla Monsoon's on commentary with Bobby Heenan. And, you know, Heenan is just poking fun at these kids here, being scared of The Undertaker. And, you know, they have the casket right there with Hulkamania. Hulkamania is going to die tonight, the whole promo.
This is The Undertaker 1 year undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what they said on TV. I think Tito Santana got a victory over him in Mexico during this run that they didn't acknowledge.
Okay. Well, the other thing, too, with The Undertaker here going into this Survivor Series, I looked this up, and Ricky Steamboat actually quit the WWF just 4 weeks before this Survivor Series. And he was in one of the traditional Survivor Series matches, but he was replaced by Tito Santana El Matador because 4 weeks prior, he refused to lose to The Undertaker on a TV taping, and he quit right there on the spot. He didn't want to lose to a new guy.
So that story is partially true.
Okay, well, that's according to The Observer, too, by the way. May I give them credit? Go ahead.
It wasn't, I don't believe it was he refused to lose. I think it was the same night that The Undertaker had put him in a body bag. They wanted him to do another match with IRS that was later in the television taping.
Okay. All right. Well, that's Jay Stu's side of the story, but I'll go with that. I can
buy
that.
Or it's Ricky Steamboat's side of the story.
Oh, all right. I can also go with that too.
Here's the champ though, Mike. Here's the champ. Hulk Hogan.
That pop for Hulk Hogan, I mean, anytime he's out here. You know, a couple things. This was the first ever one-on-one match at a Survivor Series pay-per-view. This was not a traditional Survivor Series match, obviously, but this is the first ever one. 87, 88, 89, 90, and 91 right here. First ever one-on-one match. Championship match, let alone two. And Hulk Hogan, this was his final Survivor Series. This was it. Because he was not around in 92. 93, we know in Boston, he definitely wasn't there. And then 94, he goes on to sign with WCW. But this 1991 Survivor Series, the buy rate, Jimmy, it fell from 25% from 1990. 1990 was at 400,000 buys. That was the most of that point. This one did just 300,000. And this was right after Hulk Hogan's name became synonymous with that steroid scandal. So the WWF kind of going a little bit of a tailspin here.
I believe this was around the time that the WWF implemented their new steroid drug testing.
Sounds right. And then we know Vince was summoned to court a couple of years later for that. But
Vince, of course, beat the government.
Yes, he did. And the other thing, too, with this pay-per-view, the 91 Survivor Series, Jimmy, they weren't just trying to put Undertaker over and make him that top heel, but they were also trying to promote This Tuesday in Texas, as you remember, which was 6 days later. And that was a test of seeing if they could do a pair of pay-per-views within a matter of a month or even weeks of each other. And it didn't happen again until Taboo Tuesday back in 2005. So there were a pair of pay-per-views in that one specific month there, and that was it.
Well, I think the idea was to see if you could get an audience to invest. You know, this pay-per-view, I'm guessing, was probably $30 to see if you could get the double buy. So right. 34 Survivor Series, and then Tuesday in Texas, maybe it was 20 instead of 30, but I think they were trying to get a bounce back buy. And I remember trying to beg my parents to get the Tuesday in Texas because I needed to see Hulk Hogan against The Undertaker in the rematch.
Absolutely.
Because, spoiler alert, Hulk's going to lose the title here. And I wanted to see if he was going to get it back. I didn't know what they were going to do. Yep. Confusing process.
And there's Earl Hebner again, official. There he was in the match 7 years before, and we just talked about Mankind over The Rock, and here he is right here in The Undertaker against Hulk Hogan.
It's amazing, you know, what Earl Hebner did to Hulk Hogan in 1988 against Andre the Giant, that Hulk would ever allow him to referee another one of his matches. It's amazing.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
They banned Danny Davis for less crimes.
He was a Boston guy, too. Danny Davis at WrestleCon this year, he said, I went over to him to take a look. He was charging like $30 a picture. He saw I had a belt. He goes, hey, you know what, champ? It would look a lot better if I were holding up your right hand and had your left hand with the belt. I'm like, yeah, not for $30, Danny. Sorry.
Supposedly, he has a book out.
That's the rumor and innuendo, too.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing with this match here, too, Jimmy, 60-40, the crowd in favor of The Undertaker.
And I don't know that I remember it that way.
Well, that's what the reports say, according to The Observer, 60-40. But the big report was that there were two banners on, look at Paul Bearer just choking Hulk Hogan. I should give a little play-by-play to let people know where we are. And then the camera right on Paul Bearer with the urn. Oh, yes. But there were two huge banners supporting The Undertaker on the hard camera side where the cameras could see it, but they were confiscated before the pay-per-view.
Interesting.
Because it was a heel. Here's Taker now doing a leg drop, or a elbow drop, rather. Misses Hogan. Hogan gets up. And look at that powerful punch there, Jimmy. You ever do that reaction of, who?
Oh, yeah, the point.
Yep.
Hogan's last match was at TD Garden for WWF, and the crowd was into all of his offense against Randy Orton.
It was awesome. I was there. SummerSlam 06. Maybe we'll do that sometime soon. Here's Hogan getting Taker off the ropes. Taker trying to hold on to his balance. I mean, he was only 26 years old at the time, The Undertaker here.
And he was doing moves that people 6'10 weren't doing yet.
Exactly. And I can't wait to see when he goes, well, now they call it old school Undertaker on the rope there.
And when he was in WCW as Mean Mark, and I believe his first night in WWF at the Survivor Series in 1990, which was a year ago, he used to be able to walk the rope and drop an elbow.
Oh, yeah.
He would take like two or three big steps down the ropes and drop an elbow. And he just, at 6'10 and 320, you're not supposed to do things like that.
No.
I just caught a sign, by the way, in the corner that said, that was a tombstone that said RIP Hulk Hogan.
Oh, nice. And they did not confiscate that one. I mean, Undertaker right here, now he's going with the cable around Hogan. You don't see too many of those around ringside
anymore. You can't do the, because this is a, it's either a strangle or a choke. I remember Daniel Bryan described it to me because he got fired for doing this.
Is that right?
You can't strangle or choke. It has to do with like where the cable is wrapped around your trachea, whether it's a strangle or a choke.
Okay.
But that's why, because The Rock did this to Mankind in that match. Of course, Undertaker doing it here, but that is no longer allowed in WWF. WWE.
Strictly prohibited. Yeah. Look at The Undertaker right here coming into the ring, and obviously he has so much more ink around him, all on his forearms and everything, but the only one he really had at the time was that Grim Reaper one right there on his forearm. 1991, Hogan selling the choke. Now, before this, Jimmy, the funeral
this
parlor...
This match is so slow and plodding.
I know, but there's so much to talk about, though, because the funeral parlor with The Undertaker and Ric Flair and... Hulk Hogan. Hogan did not sell Taker hitting him from behind with the urn very well, and that did not go over well.
It's Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, he can do what he wants, but it just looked awful. But
who's saying this? You? Is this you or Meltzer?
A little bit of both.
Okay. So keep this in mind when you're talking about Meltzer's comments about Hulk Hogan.
Yep.
Meltzer and Hulk Hogan have a thing.
Oh, yeah.
So that commentary is a little biased. Just letting you know.
No, it's understood.
Because Hulk Hogan wouldn't email the dirt sheets, so.
Okay. All right.
See, here's the thing, Mike, is that if you call up Dave Meltzer and you give him information, he'll be your friend and he'll write nice things about you.
Of course.
But if you ignore him, you get buried.
That's bad news. Bad news. I got to tell you, this is just, I mean, you know, as a kid.
Is that a claw on the jaw?
Yeah, it's not even a choke.
I mean.
He's trying to suffocate him.
That, which would be illegal. Earl Hebner, get in there. Referee, do your job. You have a count of five. Use the count. Especially with that glove.
Yeah. I mean, what could be on that thing? That's almost like
semi-formaldehyde.
Well, yeah, that too.
I do appreciate the guy in the front row who's dressed all in Hulk Hogan gear, who looks like he's sitting next to Wade Boggs.
Oh, it does look like Wade Boggs. Good call. With hair. That guy sitting in the front row there, dressed as Hulk Hogan, it might be the same one. If not, looks very identical to Hogan's last match in WWF for a long time, King of the Ring 93, when he dropped the belt to Yokozuna.
Of course, that was in Dayton, Ohio.
That's correct. The Nutter Center.
Of course, Bret Hart won the King of the Ring tournament.
And we know that Bret and Hogan had a little thing backstage, right?
Well, that's what Bret says.
So get ready for this, because it looks like we have some interference coming down the ring here in just a couple of minutes, Jimmy, as The Undertaker is just...
Because the real world champion, Matt Taven, I mean the real world champion, Ric Flair, is about to get involved.
Don't be a Melvin.
Even know what a Melvin is.
Well, I'm just trying to kill the joke. But I'm going to tell you right now, Rick.
That's
Flair,
easy. You just talk about it and it's killed.
Ric Flair, you know, that big gold belt, the old NWA one, he didn't have it for this show. And I know it was blocked out, a belt that he was holding up here during his traditional Survivor Series match. But the belt he was holding up was a WWF tag team belt, and it was still blocked out, just used more or less as the prop.
Yeah, so. Because so the backstory with that is the NWA, when you were the world champion, you would put up a $25,000 deposit. That's essentially so that you don't run away with that championship belt. So when Ric Flair left WCW earlier in the year, the owner, the guy who was running WCW, and his name escapes me right now, said, look, I'm sending Doug Dillinger, the head of security, to get the belt. And Flair told him, well, you better send him $25,000 plus interest.
Right, because he put the insurance on it.
Basically, this guy told him to go screw. So Flair calls Vince, tells him, I'm coming with the belt. So because Ric Flair had the rights to the belt, the championship belt, right. WCW then puts a lawsuit, and they can't use that big gold belt. So they created a tag team, a belt that looked like the WWF tag team belt, but it said Real World Champion on it. So it was, some nights they would have that one, some nights they would forget it, and they'd just give them an old tag team title. Exactly. But they were still video distorting it to get it over, to use it.
Right. And I actually found the picture of him holding it, the tag team belt right there, like you said. That president was Jim Herd.
Jim Herd. Tombstone. By God, that's the Tombstone.
That is just one. But Hogan gets up.
Of course he does. He's Hogan. The reaction of Paul Bearer is great.
Unbelievable. Oh, I mean, I just, you know, I'm just so intrigued by the character of The Undertaker, that Western mortician, you know, in his physique. And that's why he's my favorite of all time. And he's been able to do it for such a long time here. It's pretty amazing. Really is.
Long time. He fights once a year.
So
maybe.
What? He's still doing it, but Hulk Hogan ain't.
Hulk Hogan was medically disqualified.
Well, I'm sorry. Undertaker still does it.
Even though he's tried to quit and retire how many times now?
Doesn't matter. He still does it, though. He's a draw. Okay, here we go. Here comes
business just picked up.
Yep.
Nice and scoop and a slam by Hogan.
And Gorilla Monsoon is screaming, what business does he have to do down here?
He's the real world champion. Of course, he has a right to be
there. That's what Bobby Heenan says. Exactly. Heenan goes, yeah, he's here to watch. Look at Hogan pulling in Paul Bearer. Now, this is where Ric Flair sets up, or he's going for the belt. Hogan with the
Hogan's
cheap shot on him.
Stupid. Finish the match.
Yep. And that just killed it right there.
Hogan back into the ring. Undertaker doing a good job of selling Hogan's offense.
Well, he has to. He's the young guy.
Oh, there's the big boot. Nice. Nicely done.
Taker
now, why would
well.
Hogan run to that rope? Sorry, well, logical.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's because Paul Bearer is there.
I'm sure Vince is saying, God damn it, tuck your shirt in, Paul. All right, now here comes the Tombstone. This is going to decide it. Ric Flair with the chair. I got a fact for you on this here. Boom. Tombstone, head onto the chair. Taker, he is 1-2, your new WWF champion right there. And at the time, the youngest WWF champion, 26 years, 8 months, shattering Bruno Sammartino's record when he broke it in 1963 at the age of 27 years and 7 months over Buddy Rogers. However, Jimmy, Yokozuna did break The Undertaker's record a little over a year later at WrestleMania 9 when he was 26 years and 6 months of age. So
this was an impact moment for The Undertaker. A year undefeated, walks into a match with Hogan and beats him.
Huge. And Hulk Hogan actually did spend the night in the hospital there, not because of his head going onto the chair, but the way his head was kind of padded up against The Undertaker's knee. So he was supposed to do an interview after to promote Tuesday in Texas, but he was out for the rest of the show. But big moment for the Taker. Definite top heel in the company, I'd say, at that point right there. And Hulk Hogan to put him over a year into the company, new champion. That's pretty big for the future and the foreshadowing of the career of The Undertaker.
I'll tell you what, Hulk doing a hell of a job here selling.
Well, like I said, he
like
legitimately
this is
went
now
to the hospital.
A few minutes.
Yeah, he legitimately went to the hospital. He really did. He spent the night there in Detroit. Pat Patterson with that Masters green jacket. Look at that. Tony Garea's in there.
No, but what I mean, Mike, is like he is really like if he's legitimately hurt here or not, like he is really putting emphasis on like Tombstone, Chair, lost the title.
Right. And that's it, yeah. That's like the death of Hulkamania where Bobby Heenan proclaimed that on the commentary. And Jimmy, you got to remember that 6 days later, Hogan regains the title against The Undertaker, but it was just days after that where Jack Tunney vacates the title, and we know what happens at the Royal Rumble in 92, right?
Ric
the Flair. Greatest Royal Rumble ever. So this was a big, you know, jumping point to the Royal Rumble where Hogan loses to The Undertaker. Taker has the belt for 6 days, and then he gets it back 6 days later at Tuesday in Texas. And then, of course, Flair gets it in 92 at the Royal Rumble, the greatest Royal Rumble of all time, proclaimed by many, in my opinion, yes. But, you know, that was kind of the almost the beginning of a real tailspin for WWF because Hogan was out after WrestleMania 8. You know, and Ric Flair, he wasn't around much longer after that. And a lot of things changed. This was like the real starting point for when a lot of change occurred in the mid to late 90s of the WWF right here.
Well, of course, I would say that they should have been doing Hogan Flair here. And that should have been your match at WrestleMania 8. It shouldn't have been Savage Flair and Sid versus Hogan. It should have been Hogan versus Flair. But the claim is, when they did Hogan Flair on the house shows, it didn't draw.
Right. Exactly.
Which, I mean, the numbers are the numbers, but I'd have to look back and see how they promoted it and things like that.
Well,
generally speaking, that should have been the Hoosier Dome main event.
Yeah, everybody wanted to see that, and we didn't get it. Never got it.
Never got in a WWF ring.
Nope.
Unless you got to see it at a house show.
Exactly.
Which was, they did Madison Square Garden, they did the Boston Garden, they did San Francisco, they did all the major towns, and it didn't draw.
Philadelphia, Chicago.
Which is actually interesting, and it might be a bigger point of discussion about like the Northeast wrestling fans versus the Southern wrestling fans, and how Hulk Hogan, when he went down to WCW, never really drew until he turned into a villain.
Right, exactly. So it's so much right here, and this was Hogan's last ever Survivor Series and the real beginning of a different chapter in WWF right here. So Undertaker, new champion after it. Boring match, but so much storyline going into it, Jimmy. That's why I chose this one for Survivor Series 91 at the Joe Louis Arena.
Well, just to wrap up, because I think it's an interesting story around this time, was the whole steroid thing.
Yeah.
So Mike Riley, a very simple question as we close out this week's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like your wrestlers on steroids or not?
Yes.
I do too.
Kind of like baseball players.
I want to see them juiced to the gills.
Yeah, I have no issue with it. If they want to do it, it's their body.
Yep.
Right.
And just remember, Vince McMahon beat the government.
Yes, he did. So, well, that was fun, Jimmy.
Yeah, good. A couple good discussions. My watch along was better than yours because my match was actually good. Your match sucked. Oh.
It was more exciting.
But the conversation was decent.
We had very good discussion on both of them. And I'll be the voice of reason on that, you jabroni.
You're a Melvin. Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com. and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985, the show's Twitter account, my show's Twitter account, is at WrestleCast985. You can follow me on Twitter at I am the man. I am at James Stewart.
Are you going to really change your handle? You should.
No, God, no.
All right, well, change it to Melvin.
I'm not. You don't even know what a Melvin is.
Well, I'm killing the joke. That's
you're
what
not
I'm
killing the joke.
I'm killing the joke.
You're not. Like, I'm still going to call people Melvins. I'm going to call you a Melvin more now.
Right.
And we're going to get Matt Taven over more because he is the real Ring of Honor world champion.
He's a real American.
Just remember, it's my podcast and Sarge is a Melvin.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.